All right, yes, I'm touting the book, and it's just $15, full-length collection, or there's the package deal, 5 for $75. And partial explanation of the title is in the epigraph for the whole book from Pliny or Plinius or Pliny, depending on how you were trained, the Roman author. This is from his Natural History. The elephant in intelligence approaches the nearest to man. It understands the language of its country, and it remembers all the duties which it has been taught. It is a well-known fact that one of these animals, who was slower than usual in learning what was taught him, and had been frequently chastised with blows, was found conning over his lesson in the nighttime. Mutianus, who was 3 times consul, informs us that one of these animals had been taught to trace the Greek letters and that he used to write in that language. All right, 6-poem warning. I know that a lot of you have probably written poems based on Euclid's 10 postulates and axioms. And I have one of mine in the book, and this is it, postulate number 5. In her world, parallel lines went on and on, never meeting. They wanted to meet, often desperately, but just wouldn't. They had so much in common, but no. It being July, I'm going to read my July poem based on true events, and it turns out this is my most commonly reprinted poem, Commandments for July. It's July, but they've rounded up the cheerleaders and put them in Santa's helper outfits, white hooded catsuits, lacy, transparent, the openings lined with alabaster fur. They are all blonde. They are representing headache medicine. I live in a culture where young, blonde, slender, pretty is a resume, a job description. Thou shalt not deplore it. Thou probably ought not notice it. There are competitions, but I suspect thou shalt not wonder when young blonde slender will be an Olympic sport. Thou shalt not suggest that Christie's handles the auction when they go private. Thou shalt drop the Calvinist bifocals, my friends insist. Young blonde slender is a virtue, they say, like charity or a wicked curveball. Only coroners really judge people by what's inside. It turns out that in this collection I have 2 internet search engine poems. One of them is so old it was actually an Alta Vista search. This is more recent. It's entitled Not Feeling That Lucky, Seeking. It's after Billy Collins. So I was power using Google metaphor searches because my life is the Red Fort of Delhi, and most especially because my perspective is not just like the Badon with its scalloped arches, but is pavilionated in benignitude, chiefly in contrast to its mirror, Sawan. But this engine wants my life to be the Seneca Red Sandstone Quarry, which it most definitely is not. Neither is it the right panel of plate 24 of Maximilian's Aeromforte, despite the griffins, the armor, the tympanic membranes that gave me such trouble as a child. The metaphor that is given is best left still wrapped, still beribboned, in the bench under the coat rack. I have been teaching undergrads, and frequently have to insert history lessons on what I think of as very basic things because, for instance, they have no idea what the Soviet Union was or why anybody would want to have left it. And I had to use as an example to, you know, to keep from going on for hours and hours, an event that used to take place in the Giant Eagle at Squirrel Hill during the 90s, fairly commonly. And having turned it into a lesson, I then turned it into a poem. This is Russians in the Produce Aisle. I spent half my life thinking the Berlin Wall would never come down. These students are stunned to learn Russia was in the Cold War. I tell them about the Russian immigrants in the produce aisle, frozen by choices, frozen by fear. Not just the pounds and ounces instead of grams and rubles, but the wrongness of food on the same side of the wall as the customer. But the thoughtlessness of not telling how many you can try to buy without being arrested. For them, the heads of lettuce were a minefield. Everything in that aisle was tempting and terrifying and very wrong. It said danger, danger. And the Giant Eagle solved it by hiring a Russian speaker who could explain all that. this, I think, is my wife's favorite poem of mine because she had me print it out so she could hang it in her office. Some days it drives me nuts. Given a button for happiness, we are told, a rat will just keep pushing it. Languish to keep pushing it, starve to keep pushing it, die pushing it, and so would we, seems the lesson. But the surprise is that so many don't. Instead, find pressing reasons to put it off for a more auspicious day, a calmer period, when the kids are grown, or the mortgage paid, or the product shipped, or for some highly touted outsider to come and decide for them whether they deserve it. And some days it drives me nuts, and I just want to stand on the corner screaming, push the button, for crying out loud. Just push the goddamn button! Last poem. I'm skipping the title poem, which broke in half, and this is the second half. Why Elephants No Longer Communicate in Greek, number 2. When I was young, I learned this. Symbols and the books one builds from them let thoughts travel in time. Let the dead or distant speak to me personally. Now old, I think on this, Pliny's and Plutarch's elephants, trying so hard, burning the midnight oil over their lessons, trying so very hard. Thank you. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks, Joan. Thanks, Don.